Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
The president said that the State of the Union address was meant to promote and encourage unity in government. Then why follow up less than a week later with this divisive and harmful rhetoric?
Sometimes it just seems like our political ideology gets in the way of common sense. We have had a hard time in this body the last 6 years I've been here to see through a different lens, see through a common sense lens. And I'm sorry it's taken so long to get here.
Biomass workshops as well as baseload workshops. We did electric car. So we have already gone the gambit of all of these pieces that we've included in this plan.
And joining us to talk about Jeff Flake taking on President Trump again, along with the possibility that Arizona could actually ban texting while driving, our former Arizona Corporation Commission Chair Chris Mays and former Arizona Legislative Leader Art Hamilton. Welcome to you both.
Thank you so much, Dave.
Thanks, Steve. Great to be here.
So, Chris, let's start off with Flake taking on Trump again. It almost seems like he has to do it at some point. But what about what he said related to the State of the Union and treason for Democrats who didn't applaud?
Yeah, when I really appreciated his comments on this because, he basically called out the president for accusing Democrats who sat on their hands, as the opposition party always does at the State of the Union, of being guilty of treason, which is an outrageous, outlandish claim, something you just don't do. And Senator Flake said, look, this is way, way over the top. And I think he was right to do that. I think it's another example of the role he has taken on as sort of the human rebuttal to the president in his last year in office. But it is a dangerous thing that the president engaged in by accusing the opposition party of treason by simply not clapping for him. It's just not an American idea. And, you know, it's dangerous because, you know, what next? Are we going to accuse, are the Democrats going to accuse Republicans of treason the next time this happens?
Yeah, Art, what do you think?
Oh, I think, frankly, it was I'm not unexpected. But the bottom line is treason was actually defined in the Constitution because Madison was afraid that demagogues that he couldn't yet knew would be president, like, let's say Trump, might choose to use that to go after people who simply decided not to applaud. Frankly, I suspect that when we have the great parade with all the military stuff, we'll have to them salute. And those who don't salute may actually be guilty of treason.
Those did seem like a parallel. Yeah. Does that indicate a pattern to you, Art?
Oh, I think clearly there is. If he had a powdered wig and a crown and a scepter, we'd know exactly who we were dealing with.
Well, and for me, I very much appreciate what Jeff Flake has done and is doing on an ongoing basis. As a Republican, it just is alarming to me that he's all alone. He's a voice in the wilderness. There's nobody else calling the president out on these things. And so the Republican Party, I think, is going to have a big price to pay over time if we can't get more Jeff Flakes to stand up to this stuff. And so far, he's really alone.
Now, what is that about? I mean, I think I know the answer to this, but you both have run successfully for office. You've both won races. So why is it that people running for office have to do that? Why can't they have, okay, I agree with this person on these things and I disagree on these. Why does it have to be sort of like white noise?
Well, again, I think Senator Flake said it well. We become people who believe that the color uniform you wear determines what you can do, what you can say, and who you have to support. I think what Jeff Flake has done is, as he exits the stage politically, he has simply only enhanced his value. And frankly, I think more people are coming to understand what we're going to lose when we lose that voice. Because frankly, without him being there, white noise is all that seems to be emanating out of the District of Columbia.
Chris, is he someone who, as he's made himself maybe more of a statesman, is he at the same time making himself irrelevant as a politician? Because even the way the Trump administration sort of takes him away like a flea.
Yeah, and that's the danger, you know. And that, Huckabee Sanders came out and said something to that effect. She literally said, "I don't care what Jeff Flake has to say." And so that is a danger. And quite frankly, while I agree with Art that you know, he has increased his value in some ways by announcing that he's leaving. He's greatly decreased it. And certainly once he's left the Senate, I think he's going to find what a lot of us ex-politicians find, which is that, you know, you don't have that power to do things anymore. And so by exiting, he has minimized that value. But for now, he has decided that there is great value in being the one who stands up to this stuff.
Well, so do you think that Jeff Flake's a future panelist on the newscast? Is that what you're saying?
Apparently so, yes.
I think that, but I actually believe, I really do believe, and this is probably undeserved optimism, that long term, I believe Jeff Flake does have a future. Because I believe, as someone once said, the road of history is long, but in terms of justice, but it bends back in the right direction. I think people are going to come to find out what, in fact, he was speaking to. And I think, frankly, the commentary may simply be ahead of the reality that the rest of the country will come to grasp. I have told Senator Flake directly from my mouth to his ears, I pray he comes back to Arizona if he's coming back and keeps his options open to run for public office. I'd love to support him, uniform notwithstanding. I believe there's far too few people in public office today who'll speak truth to power no matter who it offends. I think we can't afford to give that up.
Yeah, but I think, though, Art, you know, for that to happen, there's going to have to be, and there may well be, a schism in the Republican Party in which the party essentially breaks in two, and you have which would open up a way for the Jeff Flakes of the world to run. I mean, quite frankly, Art, and I'm sure you agree with this, it is shocking to see that Jeff Flake is considered the moderate in this whole situation. We both remember a time when he was the conservative, and staunchly conservative at that. And so it's just a very different Republican Party.
Well, I agree, but I think the schism exists today. I think, frankly, it's fractured, and I think the only thing that's happened is nobody's taken the little rock and broken the diamond in half.
Agreed.
I think that, frankly, applies not just to the Republican Party. It applies to the Democratic Party as well. I believe people are simply tired of simply believing that we can't rise above our political registration. Because if that's really where we are, then we probably ought to go home and Steve not bring any of us back again.
So one of the people who's running to succeed Jeff Flake is Representative Martha McSally. And there was a pretty big fundraiser in Scottsdale recently that Governor Ducey attended, which, you know, is his right. But a lot of people are wondering about that, considering he has said he'd remain neutral in the race. He said very nice things about former Sheriff Arpaio. Art, what do you make about the fact that Governor Ducey is there? Because McSally really does look like, to many people, the mainstream frontrunner for the GOP there.
Well, I think people, even those who say they're going to remain neutral, I think are frankly terrified at their core that my friend Joe might be the Republican
nominee.
Was
that your friend in quotes, Art, or is that?
No. Joe and I are friends. I think we've been friends, really deep friends, ever since he was retired. But I've always liked Joe. But nonetheless, I think they simply have made a judgment that they need to make sure that they hold on to the seat because it's important for them to maintain their majority in the Senate. I think they see McSally as their best chance to do that. And I think people are going to step up and support her.
Well, and Steve, also, when you take a look at who was attending that fundraiser and where it was at and the donors who were at it, those were all Ducey donors. Mm-hmm. I would imagine it was hard for him to stay away. I don't know if they thought they could keep it a secret. That would be ridiculous. I mean, the reason it got out was he was, you know, Jason Chaffetz, the former congressman, tweeted out a picture of him standing with Governor Ducey. So hard to keep those, can't keep people from tweeting out of a fundraiser like that. It was at the Kendricks airport hangar. So it's hard to imagine that Ducey wasn't going to show up at that thing.
Now, Chris, are Ducey and McSally clear allies here? I mean, if she's someone, let's say she decided not to run, when Senator McCain is no longer in office, is she someone he would have considered for that seat were she not running for the Flake seat?
I think she certainly would have been in the mix. And so, yeah, I mean, I think they're fairly simpatico from a political standpoint. She probably would have been in the mix. I'm not sure that she would have been chosen, but because I think he's probably got closer allies that he would have tapped. But I do think she would have been in the mix and is definitely, as Art said, the person that they are rooting for in a big way.
And Art McSally is considered to be sort of the mainstream Republican. She also represents the seat that was formerly held by Gabby Giffords. Based on what you've heard from her, the way she jumped into this campaign, does she seem like someone to you who has what it takes to be a senator, to be a national figure and win this race?
Oh, I think she does. I was at the hangar. I think I was serving drinks or whatever I was required
to do. Didn't have your billions with you.
I had my little towel over my arm, but... My bottom line was I thought it was probably, I think, a lot more red meat from her than I expected. But I think she clearly has the ability to be a senator. I think she has the gravitas to do that. I think her military background runs deep in Arizona, as Arizona does in the country. And I think she's also a particular favorite of Senator McCain. I think for a lot of reasons, she probably is the odds-on favorite. And not only do I believe Doug Ducey had to be there. I think probably had they asked, he would have served drinks with me.
Well, it's interesting, though, to see, despite the fact that she is probably politically aligned with Ducey and mainstream Republicans, she is taking a rhetorical swing in a big way to the right and toward Trump. I mean, I was joking with Art earlier about all the cussing she's been doing. If I knew I could cuss that much when I was a corporation commissioner and regulating all those utilities, boy, whoopee.
Well, those of us who knew you as a journalist heard you swear.
Oh, right. Yeah, as a journalist, I did a lot of that. But, you know, so she's definitely appealing to Trump voters, both rhetorically and in some ways politically. She's trying to get into pictures with Trump every chance she gets. So she's doing what she probably has to do to get through this primary while being really sort of politically grounded with the mainstream.
Well, Art, briefly before the break, how hard is that to have someone swing? Because we've seen it many times, but especially with someone as polarizing as President Trump, you're with him. I'm sure she kind of wants him there just in case, but can't that turn off a lot of voters?
Well, I think it can, but at the same time, she's got a primary to win. And I think she's made a political calculation that the only way to do that is to, in fact, be as flexible as she can be. I believe she actually right now looks a little bit like Gumby, but I think that's probably necessary to get through this primary season. I suspect if she gets there through the primary, she probably will try to come back closer to center.
Chris, any more comments on that?
No,
okay.
I totally agree.
Chris Mays, Art Hamilton with me. It's our Friday news cap here on the show, and the conversation continues after this. Good Friday morning. It is the Friday news cap here on the show on 91.5 KJZZ. In Phoenix, I'm Steve Goldstein, along with former Arizona Corporation Commission Chair Chris Mays and former Arizona Legislative Leader Art Hamilton. Now, Art, I think all of us in this room drive a lot. But of course, because we're a certain age, we never text and drive. Of course not. So texting and driving ban in Arizona is moving forward. 47 other states have something. Arizona has been not real progressive in this particular issue. What do you think? Is this the year to make it happen? Should it happen?
You are a master of understatement on this particular issue. I think it's probably going to happen. Frankly, the people texting and driving have become such an impediment to public safety that I think they may have to do something. I think we had a better chance of passing this when only 30 states had passed it. The closer it gets to 50, the less inclined we seem to be willing to do anything. But I think, frankly, the time has come. The reality is this really has become a public safety issue. I was on the freeway the other day with a guy who was texting. He slowed down 15 miles an hour on the I-10. Now, normally everybody else is driving about 90, but it was frightening, and he had no idea where he was. He was more into his texting than he was driving.
Yeah, it is astonishing, and I think this is why it may be more likely to pass this year. I mean, every day that goes by, you see more and more people as artsy. You turn to your right, you turn to your left, and everybody's on their phones with their foot on the gas pedal. And it's like, this is ridiculous. And as a mom, I have to believe, for me, this is a big issue. And I have to believe that it is becoming that kind of public safety, public health issue that's driving public sentiment that will then finally drive a kind of intransigent legislature to finally do something.
I wonder about the fact that it would be a secondary violation, though. Aren't you someone who is a legislative leader, knows all the ins and outs of this kind of thing? The fact that an officer would have to pull someone over for something else. Does that make it less impactful potentially?
Oh, I think it does starting out, but there are a lot of things that started out as secondary violations that have become primary violations. And the other thing is, if in fact you see me driving, there's probably always a reason to pull me over. If I happen to be texting, they wouldn't have a problem doing the secondary issue as well. But I think that's kind of how people get their foot in the door. I have to believe at the end of the day, if it goes down that direction, it's going to ultimately become a primary reason to stop people.
I mean, it's a very real problem. I mean, there was a study that came out showing Arizona roads are among the most dangerous in the country. I think this combined with wrong-way drivers on the freeways are a major problem for our state. And people are frankly getting fed up and frustrated that those problems, which we've known about now for years, haven't yet been solved. I mean, government's there for one purpose, which is to solve, you know, clear and evident dangerous situations. And if we can't even do that, we've got a problem.
Spoken like a practical person. Thank you, Chris. That's why you're not in politics anymore.
So thank you. Right.
So, Chris, one issue that is close to your heart, Corporation Commissioner Andy Tobin is calling for 80% of Arizona's energy to come from clean sources by 2050. And I guess there's a different kind of definition for clean sources that can vary. But you were a major leader when you were Corporation Commission Chair about Arizona's renewable energy standard. What do you think of what he's saying? And for a lot of people, 2050 sounds like 32 years from now. So it doesn't seem like it's a big hurry here.
Well, you know, I really do appreciate what Commissioner Tobin is trying to do with this proposal and plan. Basically, he has said we should be at 80% by 2050 and 100% not too long after that. He does count nuclear as clean. I wouldn't put nuclear in that mix. So that, and basically, it takes 80% to 50 because APS and other utilities can count Palo Verde in here, and I never would do that. Okay. But nevertheless, 50% is okay and is something we certainly can meet and ought to be trying to meet. Andy is trying to get about 3,000 megawatts of storage in place through this standard. A lot of energy efficiency, is very into biomass, wants to make sure that we make our forests safe from wildfires in the future through biomass and using some of that dead wood that we have out there. So I appreciate what he's trying to do. It will be interesting to see how the utilities react to this. So far, they've been tame. But I hear behind the scenes they're not too thrilled with it. That being said, this is just a plan on paper right now. Andy has got to do, the commission has got to do rulemakings mm-hmm. to make this a requirement. Otherwise, it's just paper.
Do you expect other commissioners to get on board? When you were with the commission, you were various mixes. You were with a body that had a mix of Republicans and Democrats. You were with an entirely Republican body, if I remember.
Well, and in fact, it was the all-Republican commission I served on that passed the original renewable energy standard of 15% by 2025. And so I don't know. It's not clear to me that he's got the votes to make this mandatory on the utilities. And again, unless you make it mandatory, it's not going to get done.
Art, considering how significant renewable energy is in Arizona, what do you make of this concept?
Well, again, I think it's where we're going. It's where we have to go. Just in letting people know where I am. I happen to be a consultant with a major utility here. We won't mention their name. Their initials are APS. I spent 34 years with SRP. But I think at the end of the day, there's no question that despite the President's State of the Union address, we talked about beautiful, clean coal, and as we were choking, I think this is clearly a place where we have to go. Arizona is a place that our natural beauty has always been one of our greatest assets. And I think we have to protect it. And frankly, we have to protect the health as well. I just think Chris is absolutely right. Maybe we need to do it before 2050. I won't be around to see that unless I can get my rocking chair going. But it seems to me we have to do this.
And Arizonans agree with Art about that. I mean, renewable energy in Arizona, in particular solar, pulls off the charts in this state. 80% of Arizonans believe we ought to be doing more of it, not less. Mm-hmm. Solar energy in particular is sort of in our DNA. What do we have in this state? We have the sun. So I think Arizonans are going to be with Andy Tobin on this. Hopefully he can get the votes at the commission for it. If not, at some point, I think the people of Arizona are going to take this matter into their own hands, and they're going to pass something that will make it happen.
Art, one of the issues I wanted to bring up, we got a press release earlier this week that Greg Stanton is giving the State of the City address in March, which is a month away. And people have been wondering when Greg Stanton's going to resign to actually run for Congress. And there are a lot of people who want to run for mayor. Without casting aspersions on Mayor Stanton, what do you make of this? The fact that he has announced he's running for Congress, and it was several months ago. He's still in the mayor's office, and a lot of people are kind of itching to go, what's their next move?
I think they're going to have to wait, frankly. The bottom line is the State of the City address draws a big crowd. It's a great platform, and I think as long as he can hold on to that platform, he's going to try to do that. I suspect he's pretty well down the road in terms of his decision to run for Congress. But that seat currently is already occupied by somebody else who, will, again, at some point will decide for sure to move on. But, again, my thing is I think long term he clearly is committed to a congressional race, but he's not about to give up that platform until he absolutely has to. It's too much fun.
Chris?
Yeah, no, I agree. And Art's absolutely right. That State of the City address draws thousands of people. It draws incredible media attention. The interesting thing about this, if I'm not mistaken, it does bump the city election, the mayoral election, into August and November. Mm-hmm. Lots of ups and downs, pros and cons to that. You get a much bigger turnout. It's cheaper, so the people pay less for the election. Downside is it's getting thrown into the mix with all these other amazing elections we're going to have in November, including a huge Senate race and all these congressional races and the gubernatorial race.
Now, can we presume Mayor Stanton is getting calls from people who want to run for mayor and say, you know, Mayor, we'd support you, but can you get out of the office for a while?
I suspect he's getting a lot of advice on why it would be a good thing to move on quickly because people would just love to have him out there doing something different. But again, I think he understands his own self-interest, and they understand as well, given if they were in that position, they'd probably be doing the same thing. But there are a lot of people anxious to see him make that move because they have places they want to go as well.
I'd love to be a fly on the wall of his speechwriter for that speech. You know, what? Usually for a State of the City, it's a little prospective. You know, you're talking about the future, but if you're not running for mayor, what exactly are you going to talk about? I mean, probably all of your accomplishments in the past.
And how well you can help with the city, not only from where you happen to be now, but where you will be hopefully down the road. Mm-hmm. My God, I'd make a great congressperson. I'll bring home lots of money to the city.
And guys, our final minutes. So Debbie Lesko, who's running for the CD8 seat that is currently held, or was held by Trent Franks, and then he resigned. She got an endorsement from Jan Brewer, now this week from Andy Biggs. Is she clearly the front runner to you, Art, in that race?
From what I hear, yes. Again, I don't know because I don't get deeply entrenched in our politics out that part of town. But clearly, I think the endorsements have to be helped to her.
I think so. Mm-hmm. I always thought she would be. She is a sitting senator from that district, fairly popular out there. Montenegro and Lesko are sort of, I think, neck and neck right now. But with these endorsements that she's landing, they're pretty big endorsements. She's got Brewer, now she's got Biggs. Montenegro's endorsements, I don't, you know, maybe not quite as stellar. So I think she is. I think she's got the advantage of being out there, being in office, and being very visible. It is interesting that it went from, you know, I think Bob Stump, my former colleague at the commission, used to be sort of up there. Mm-hmm. It was probably a three-person race, and recently that has changed.
Former Arizona Corporation Commission Chair Chris Mays, former Arizona Legislative Leader Art Hamilton. Guys, thanks for being here with the NewsCap.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
You've been listening to the Friday NewsCap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.